This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After the big blackout in the Northeast and parts of the Middle West and Canada, we're looking at the price of power this week. Later in the program, we'll focus on alternative energy and microgrids. But first, there are a lot of unanswered questions about the bomb that shattered the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad yesterday. Joining us now from Baghdad is NPR's Ivan Watson. Good of you to be with us.
Hello, Neil.
Ivan, do we have any information yet on who may have been responsible for this attack?
At this time, authorities here are not saying very much. We have gotten some statements coming from the FBI here. An agent spoke with the Reuters news agency, and he described the actual bomb that blew up the United Nations headquarters. He said it was a massive bomb of perhaps 1,500 pounds of explosives, including artillery shells and mortar shells. And he says that some of these unexploded items may still be in the rubble, and it's making the recovery effort somewhat difficult. There are fears that something could still explode. But as for who actually caused this, nobody has come forward and claimed responsibility yet. It's all speculation at this point.
Yesterday there was speculation that this was in a concrete truck. Today we learned apparently it was on a flatbed truck.
The theories that are being batted about, basically people are talking about a truck bomb, and the FBI today and police officials on the scene yesterday told me that they believe it's a possible suicide bombing. The FBI says that there were some human body parts left among what remained of what may have been a truck that, according to one version, it may have burst through a protective wall near the facade of the United Nations headquarters, which was so heavily damaged by the subsequent explosion.
And as I understand it, you talked about difficulties in the effort to go through the wreckage of that building. It's feared there could be more bodies inside.
Right. A spokesman for the United Nations, who was at the scene this morning, he said that he did fear that there were more bodies underneath the rubble. And if you take a look at it, it was the third floor building, a corner that actually collapsed downwards, and the rubble does reach up to that third floor. And today there was heavy machinery on the scene. They were trying to pick through some of this, but it's anybody's guess what is still underneath some of these massive pieces of concrete that have piled up there.
The U.S. top administrator in Iraq, Paul Bremer, was speaking about this incident today on American television. Did he have anything new to say?
Well, he acknowledged that there was a major problem here. He said there had always been a security problem, but in one interview he said now Iraq has a terrorist dimension added to its security problem. In fact, he and his staff have been warning for weeks now of the possibility of foreign fighters coming into Iraq, infiltrating the country. He's also been warning about the resuscitation of a group called Ansar al-Islam. It's an alleged al-Qaeda-linked organization. It had a training camp up in the north of Iraq, which was targeted by U.S. cruise missiles at the height of the fighting last April. So he and his staff have been warning of possible attacks, of possible moves like this. And I have to remind you about the bombing of the Jordanian embassy 2 weeks ago that took place in Baghdad. That killed and injured roughly 80 people, and that case has not been solved yet. Nobody has claimed responsibility for that. Many Iraqis you talk to on the ground here, they insist it could not be Iraqis that are behind these attacks, since most, in fact, of the casualties, of the victims, are Iraqi citizens. They're the local staff that work at these places. In the case of the Jordanian embassy, a lot of people who were coming to apply for things like visas.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan returned to UN headquarters in New York today, breaking off his vacation to say that the UN will persevere in Iraq. The mission there is too important. What's happening to the UN mission there in Baghdad? Are there plans to remove staff?
We're hearing about a partial evacuation of United Nations staff, and that does make sense since so many people were injured by flying shards of glass and by pieces of wreckage that was coming down around them. So we've heard about several planes that perhaps have flown from Baghdad International Airport to Amman, Jordan. But I spoke with a UN spokesman today on the scene, and he reiterated the fact that the UN would not leave, that if somebody wants to drive the UN out of this country, this is not the way to do it. These were brave words. At the same time, he added that definitely the security situation has changed, that the UN is being targeted. And this is not the first time the aid organization, the aid community here has been targeted. There were people from the International Committee of the Red Cross, an expatriate worker who was shot dead when his vehicle, which was clearly marked with the Red Cross, was attacked south of Baghdad about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Another organization called the IOM also lost employees. So today I spoke with some of these aid organizations, and they were all holding meetings talking about what to change here, what kind of security measures could be adopted to protect themselves from future attacks, because in fact one of these truck bombs could really run through almost any compound of any aid organization or foreign-owned business in this city.
We sometimes forget that this UN compound has not been in use just since the end of the war. This has been up and going for quite some years now, more than a decade at the Canal Hotel, that UN compound. But as I understand it, there are discussions about that the UN could have had more American security outside and declined the offer.
Well, it's a political question, and there was a UN official who was quoted saying that they did not want to have a large American military presence outside their building, and that does make sense. The UN has been critical of the American occupation of this country, and they do not want to be seen hand in hand with US troops who are not liked by many Iraqis, in fact hated by some Iraqis. And it probably would have sent the wrong message, according to UN officials, to have several American tanks in front of the building and have American soldiers patting down people coming in and out of that building. The UN wanted Iraqis to look to it to be perhaps a solution to the American occupation of this country. And that was underscored today by UN officials who said, we were here to help the Iraqi people. We were here to try to negotiate some settlement to bring an end to foreign occupation. Whoever caused this incident, whoever launched this attack, they killed the head of the UN mission, who was perhaps the best weapon in the UN arsenal, according to the UN, for trying to bring an end to this very difficult situation right now.
Thanks very much, Ivan.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR's Ivan Watson speaking with us from Baghdad. Yesterday at a briefing in Washington, D.C., State Department spokesman Richard Boucher responded to concerns that Syria is not doing enough to stop the flow of potential terrorists in and out of Iraq. He called for Syria to police its own borders and doubted Syria's claim that it has closed its borders with Iraq.
We don't think that's been done effectively, whether that's because of just ineffectiveness or whether that's because of some permission, I'm not in a position to make a judgment at this point. Whatever the facts, whatever the reasons, the facts are there needs to be more done to control the border, and that's what we're pressing for.
Joining us now here in Studio 3A is NPR's Eric Westerveld. Always good to have you on the program, Eric.
Good to be here, Neil.
This issue of secure borders around Iraq is not just a question of Syria. State Department spokesman Boucher called on Iraq's other neighbors to do more. You've crossed some of those frontiers not that long ago. How secure are they?
Well, not very secure. I mean, the main border areas, Neil, that I've been to since the war, Kuwait, Jordan, and near Turkey, they are secure at the main checkpoints. But outside of that, there are vast stretches of land that are totally unprotected. Patrols along these areas are spotty at best. And even at the main border checkpoints, there are still huge problems with forged passports and visas. I can tell you just a week ago when I passed through the Iraq side of the Jordan-Iraq border, there were just a handful, really a few U.S. military soldiers, not a large U.S. military presence, and some Iraqi guards the U.S. military had hired were giving a kind of cursory check through our bags and through some of the trucks that passed through, but it clearly was not heavy security.
Obviously, Mr. Boucher was speaking about Syria yesterday. Is that the border of most concern? What about the others?
There's concern with other borders as well. Turkey, part of Saudi Arabia. I think Kuwait's border, Kuwait has done a lot since the war to beef up security along that stretch. But there clearly are concerns elsewhere, Syria, as we mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Is monitoring of any assistance? There are obviously, as they describe in the intelligence profession, overhead assets that are available, everything from, satellites to reconnaissance drones.
All right, electronic surveillance by airplanes or satellites really only give you a snapshot, Neil, every few hours, and it's clearly not enough. So I think Iraq's borders will remain vulnerable to arms smuggling and infiltration by terrorists unless the U.S. administration does something else. Their plan right now, Neil, is to speed up the training of new Iraqi police, border agents, and a new Iraqi military. But that's going to take months. And in the meantime, they're going to rely on electronic surveillance, and it's spotty at best because they just don't have the U.S. troop numbers to put out patrols along Iraq's long, porous borders. Many argue they don't have enough troops. The U.S. doesn't to really patrol the interior of the country, let alone beef up border protection.
The answer, a lot of people say, with so many security issues, is not more American troops, but to train Iraqis to patrol their own borders.
Clearly, they're going to try to do that, but it takes a lot of time to recruit these people, to screen them, to make sure that they're not just former Baathists coming in to reclaim their own security job, and then to train them and get them up to a level that the Americans feel confident with them, to deploy them in some sensitive areas and to secure borders and other key checkpoints.
It's worth noting that we think of this as just a desert, but there's an awful lot of different topography here. On part of the border with Iran, there are marshlands along the Shatt al-Arab, the confluence of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers as it flows into the Persian Gulf there. Then up in the north near Turkey, it's very mountainous, rugged country. And over to the west by Syria, very dry, rocky desert. And then the more sandy, familiar desert down near Saudi Arabia.
Right. Some of these areas clearly are dangerously remote. But that said, there are areas you can pass through if you have a four-wheel drive, if you know locals, if you're adventurous, as many terrorists and smugglers are.
If you have a GPS system.
If you have a GPS, you can make your way through these border areas. And it may be a challenge, but it certainly is doable.
When you cross these borders, what's it like? I mean, is it like crossing an international frontier anywhere else in the world? Tell us what it was like.
Well, yes and no. I mean, clearly there are border agents who are checking your passport and visa and going through that, going through your bags a little bit. And sometimes coming through into Iraq, it was slow because there were simply so many people with so many goods and trucks coming in. Commerce had been stopped during the war, so it's flowing back in. So it was a chaotic situation, often long lines, long waits. And clearly, sometimes by the time they got to us or people behind us, they really just had a chance to give a cursory check of some of the luggage and bags, and it was not a thorough security screening, per se.
I guess it's also worth noting that until after the First World War, a lot of these borders, I guess with the exception of the Iranian border, well, they didn't exist as international frontiers. They were provincial borders, parts of the Ottoman Empire, and that there are nomadic cultures in that region where even the idea of a border is hard to imagine.
That's right. I mean, these were artificial creation of the dissolution of the Ottoman Empire, a lot of these borders. And there is, as you point out, a nomadic culture and a history of long, porous borders and trade fluidity between the countries. But clearly a lot has changed since the breakup of the Ottoman Empire. And I'd like to point out that the issue of Iraq's border security has been an issue for a long time. It was an issue right before the war, where many opponents of war said, hey, one way to stop Saddam Hussein from exporting his alleged weapons of mass destruction was to beef up security along borders. So this has clearly been an issue, a top issue for a while, and continues to be so.
NPR's Eric Westervelt. Thanks very much for coming in.
Glad to be here.
Eric Westervelt was with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll continue our series on the price of power, today focusing on alternatives. If you'd like to call us with your questions or your experiences with wind, solar, and other non-traditional energy sources, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us email, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.